This is a little bit of a variation on a lesson that we've had in the past. I have to apologize for the rerun, but added a little bit to it. And there's some things I think that hopefully will make this kind of an interesting lesson for us to consider, particularly in light of a lot of the things that are going on in the world today. I think there's some applications that we should consider as we are going to be, Lord willing, here in a minute, looking through some of the events that happen in the book of Esther and concerning Esther and Mordecai. And so we'll start out, though, just reminding ourselves of the Lord and his work here. And here we see in chapter 17, in verse beginning in verse 24, where Paul is showing all of us. He says here, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. So we see him reminding us here that the Lord is the one that gives us literally everything, our life, our breath, and all things. And further down in verse 28, it's not just something that he's done and that he's stopped doing, but here it says, for in him we live and move and have our being. He says, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So God has created us. He has given us life, but he continues to sustain us day by day. And he reminds us here that it's only in him that we have our being. And of course, we also should remember Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. And the promise that he gives us there, that he is going to, where it says, we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and who are the called according to his purpose. And if we stop and we think about what that implies, it implies a great deal. Think about the total control that God has to have over all of this earth in order for him to be working all of these things together for good to those that love him. And so we as we go through the lesson tonight, let's be considering the individual situations that we're in, and let's be considering the situations that are going on around us, and make application of some of these passages that we're reading through tonight, remembering that he is working all of these things. That it, as he tells us in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 29, Jesus said there, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore you are of more value than many sparrows. And as we are considering these things, there's a lot of things going on today that can make us fearful in various ways. And here Jesus is telling us to not fear, that we should remember that not even one of these seemingly worthless little birds that's flitting around, not one of them is going to fall without him deciding that it's time for that to happen. And so the Lord truly is in control, and he's working these things, and we need to acknowledge that. Proverbs 3 and verse 6 says, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And so as we see these events transpiring before us and in our lives, we need to realize, well, the Lord is at work here, and we may not understand all of these things that are happening at this particular instant, but we need to have that faith in knowing that he is behind these things. And you know, we often sing the song there from Micah 6 and verse 8, where we talk or sing about what the Lord requires of us. And there in that verse, he says, what does the Lord require of thee but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God? And one of those aspects of walking humbly with God is realizing who he is and who we are in relation to him, and the fact that he does give us all that we have, and it's only through him that we have our being, and that he's working all of these things for our good if we're living to fulfill his purpose. And so we want to be considering that tonight as we go through this lesson, and we want to use the story that we read through in Esther of Mordecai and the things that happened with him and with Esther, and see how there's many of the same types of situations that come up today. It may not, it's certainly not in most cases going to be on the scale that it was with that we see with Mordecai and Esther, but we have many of the same kinds of things that we're faced with if we will think about it in that light. And we need to be considering the kind of response that the Lord is teaching us to have in these situations. So we'll begin in Esther chapter 1. Just a little background there. This most historians believe that this was written, or the reign of this king Ahasuerus, that it talks about there in verse 1, that this was in the about the 5th century before Christ. And so here in Esther chapter 1 and verse 3, we're talking about the third year of the reign of this king Ahasuerus. And so roughly about 488 or 482 BC is about the time period that this is starting here. And so chapter 1 is describing this king and how the king becomes angry at the queen for not obeying his commandments. And later down in the chapter, the king's wise men convinced the king to remove Vashti from being queen and to find someone to replace her. And so we go into chapter 2. And the king goes through a search for the queen. And so we pick up in verse 5. It says there, "Now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away." So we see here Mordecai was a Jew. He was one of the ones that had been carried away captive. Now think about that situation if that was us, and what it would have felt like to have been one of these ones that had been carried away into a strange land, and he's now serving under this foreign king in Babylon. And here he is, a Jew, a stranger in the midst of this nation that he's been carried away into. In verse 10, subsequent verses there talk about him raising Esther as his niece, as his own daughter. And in verse 10, it notes there that Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. So they were being very careful here. As they were in this nation, this foreign nation, they were not revealing who they were. They had been carried away, but they were not making an open show of who they were. And so obviously Mordecai considered the situation that they were in and determined at that time that it was best not to reveal that Esther was a Jew. Now we're going to see in a minute in chapter 3 that this certainly wasn't because Mordecai was ashamed of being a Jew, but it seems here that he's looking at the situation that they're in and being prudent and careful about not revealing things that don't need to be revealed. And so as it goes on into chapter 2, there's a search that's made, and Esther is brought into the palace as part of that search. And so in verse 17, we notice there it says, "And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti." It's very interesting to consider how, of all the different ones that he could have picked here, that he picked Esther. And again, we need to go back to what we're thinking about tonight, where we're considering the Lord's work and that he's working all of these things. And we should be reminded of what he teaches us in Proverbs 21 and verse 1, where it says there that the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever he will. And we need to ask ourselves the question, does it seem likely here that this was just a coincidence that Esther happened to be chosen to be the queen here? And of course, we realize that that's not the case, and the Lord is working these things. And we consider, well, what is it, just the way it's worded here in this verse 17, the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight. So it's interesting here how we're seeing that for whatever reason and in whatever way, the Lord has caused Esther to obtain this favor in the sight of the king. It again notes in verse 20, it says, Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. So she continued to be careful not to reveal her background here, who her people were, that she was of the Jews. But yet she's now being made the queen. Now, we also see at the end of chapter 2 that there's an event that transpires in which Mordecai is involved. Beginning in verse 21, it says, in those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen. And Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now, again, a side note for us to consider here, the situation that Mordecai was in. He had been carried away captive. He was now serving under this foreign king. Put ourselves in his place and consider what would our reaction have been. Here, Mordecai, despite the fact that he's a captive and been carried out of his homeland, he's being faithful to serve the king under which he has been put. He understands that the Lord is the one that is ruling in these nations, and that no matter what situation he's in, that he needs to be faithful to those that he is under. And so when he hears of this conspiracy with the king's chamberlains, that that they're seeking to kill the king, he makes that known, and he causes the king's life to be saved, despite the fact that this king was part of the ones that had carried his people away. So, you know, many people would have seen that as an opportunity to take vengeance and to help with that. But Mordecai here is following the Lord's ways, and he's being faithful in the situation and the position that he's been put into. Now, if we go into chapter 3, we see some things that begin to transpire with the king and some of the king's other servants. In particular, it talks about this man named Haman that has been promoted above the other princes. In verse 1, it says, after these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Now, we'll see as we continue to read through this that certainly Haman was not one who deserved any type of honor. But, of course, Mordecai, as a servant of God, knew that he could not bow down to any man or in that way, but certainly not give any type of honor to this Haman. But that was despite the fact that this was a commandment that had been given by the king. So here was Mordecai that was standing up against the king's commandment. Here, you know, he was in the gate with all of these other servants of the king. And when Haman would come by, these other servants would bow down and do reverence to Haman. But what about Mordecai? We might think about some of our own situations that we're faced with in different aspects. It might be our work. It might be Just some place or some event that we're in where maybe everyone around us is bowing down or honoring something that when we think about it, we ought not to be honoring. There's a lot of applications that we could make here. I can think of some, for example, in our workplaces. Many of us, including myself, but others also that I've spoken with, we're being asked to go along with some of these ungodly lifestyles that are being promoted these days. And oftentimes there's these very slick campaigns that are going on within the workplace that talk about being inclusive and having diversity and these kinds of things. And on the surface, these things sound perfectly benign. And but then you start to see, well, what are they really talking about here? We see that, well, they're talking about practices and things that are completely abomination to the Lord. And many of us are being asked to go along with these kinds of things and to wear badges and to promote these things in our emails and to our employees and things like that. And there's that pressure, to go along and do what everyone else is doing. And what's the potential consequence if we don't go along with those things? Well, here was Mordecai that was here in the group of ones that were sitting by the king's gate. They were all bowing and doing reverence according to the king's commandment, but he was not. He continued to remain there in his seat and not bow down to this Haman. So certainly it was a situation where he stood out and he was very, very noticed that he was not keeping the king's commandment and he was not doing what everyone else was doing. And so we're all faced with those kinds of pressures in different ways where there's pressure on us to go along and to be like everyone else. Something very recent that's just happened within the last couple of days is that we've had a Supreme Court justice who has just passed away. And we hear individuals on different sides of opinions on that matter. And we hear some that are rejoicing in her death. And we hear others that are condemning. And we need to consider, well, what does the Lord think about all of this? And of course, we know from Ezekiel chapter 18 and verse 23, where the Lord asks a rhetorical question, and he says, "Have I any pleasure at all that the wicked should die, saith the Lord, and not that he should return from his ways and live?" So we certainly understand that the Lord, and certainly we should not have any pleasure that the wicked have perished. But on the other hand, we also need to recognize when people are wicked. And we consider the record of this individual that's just passed away and how she for generations has upheld some of the things that are literally some of the worst abominations that the Lord describes in his word. And so we should recognize that. And despite there's many today that are revering her and talking about all the great accomplishments that she achieved in her life, and they're wanting everybody to join together and honor this woman. We need to ask ourselves, well, is that really the right thing for us to do? What type of a person was this? Well, it's somebody who committed abomination and who upheld abomination for an entire nation for many generations or several generations. And so we need to be seeing things the way the Lord is seeing. We certainly don't need to be rejoicing. But on the other hand, we also don't need to be celebrating, and we need to be recognizing things for what they are. And that's going to cause us to stand out in many cases where, in this case, there's individuals on both sides that are going to maybe look at us and say, well, why aren't you reacting the same way that we're reacting? And we need to understand, well, that's going to happen if we're faithful to obeying the Lord's words and judging the way the Lord judges. There's going to be those times that we're going to stick out like a sore thumb, and others are going to notice that and put pressure on us in various ways. Now, if we come back here to Esther chapter 3 and we read verse 3, we see the pressure begin to be applied on Mordecai. Here in verse 3, it says, "Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, Why transgressest thou the king's commandment?" So They were right there with Mordecai at the gate as he was not bowing down when they all were. They asked the obvious question, why are you not doing what the king has told us all to do here? And so they're putting this pressure on Mordecai. And of course, what does it mean to be accused and to not be keeping the king's commandment? Mordecai was putting his life at risk here by disobeying this direct commandment from the king. And this went on and on. In verse 4, it says, it came to pass when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand. For he had told them that he was a Jew. So we see here that when it was required, Mordecai was not afraid to make it known that he was a Jew. Certainly they were asking why, as we saw there in verse 3, why are you breaking the commandment? Well, what did Mordecai have to say in that case? He had to say, well, I'm a Jew and I follow the Lord's ways and I can't do this. And, of course, they weren't content with that answer. And so that's why we see in verse 4 that daily they continued to notice that he was not obeying the king's commandment. And they're telling Haman about this and bringing this up as an issue. And so Mordecai now is getting into some hot water here because of his standing up for what he knew the Lord would have him to do in this situation. And so we need to consider, are we ready to have that kind of a response in different situations that come up where there may be some type of pressure that's put on us? We see that pressure continues to step up in verse 5. It says, when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for that they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. So here, because of this thing that Mordecai has done, now Haman has it out for the entire nation of the Jews. Well, again, if we draw some parallels today, don't we see some of the very same things happening today? We see various ones standing up saying, this is not a godly thing to do. And what has that resulted in, even in our nation that we're in today here? We see many, many different ones being attacked as Christians. We see churches that are being told that they're not allowed to meet. We see, sort of them being singled out by different officials that are in positions of power to try to shut them down. So we are seeing more and more situations where there are those that are taking actions against those that claim to be Christians and trying to stop what they're doing because of their position on different issues that is in disagreement with their own. And so here in chapter 3 and verse 8, we see Haman now coming to the king to try to do something about these Jews. So in verse 8, he says, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws, therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. So here Haman is pointing out these people are not, their laws are different than everyone else's. Well, what do we hear about the laws of Christ today? We see a lot of attacks being made and saying that those that are believing in this or believing in that's just hateful and it's just not right. And so we see many attacks being leveled against Christians because of their following of God's laws, which are very different than these laws that have been accepted by the world. And so we need to see these parallels here and be ready to respond in the same way that we see Mordecai faithfully responding. And so we see an enemy here that's working against Mordecai and working against God's people. And in verse 9, he says, if it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. So here we have an official in the government that is actively working to destroy the Jews. Do we think that anything like that could possibly happen in our world today? Well, We've probably already read quite a number of stories where we hear about various government officials that are working to destroy the ability of God's people to continue to do what the Lord wants them to do. So we have very similar situations happening today, and we need to learn from these examples that we're reading from here. And unfortunately, we see in verse 11, it says, "The king said unto Haman, the silver is given unto thee, the people also, to do with them as it seems good to thee." So the king has now given permission to Haman to go and to wipe out the Jews from amongst all of these provinces that he rules over. Now we see as we continue on in chapter 4 that that's not the Lord's plan. And here we're going to see in chapter 4 that Mordecai now makes a request to Esther to go to speak to the king, make supplication to the king on behalf of the Jews. In verse 7 of chapter 4, it says, "Mordecai told him," that this is the king's chamberlain, "of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. Also, he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make request before him for her people." So now Mordecai sees this opportunity that Esther, here is the queen. She has the ability now to go and make supplication for her people before the king. And so he provides her the law in writing that the king has established to destroy the Jews, and makes this request that she would go in unto the king. Now, if we go down to verse 11, we'll see Esther's initial response to this request from Mordecai. It says, "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king and into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such unto whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days." So here, Esther has been requested to go speak to the king, but there's a law that says, well, if you go to the king on your own and you've not been requested to come before the king, it's up to him to decide whether he wants to hear you or not, and if not, that you would be put to death. And so what was on the line here for Esther? We see here's a situation she's presented with where literally her life is now at stake. And she's a little bit anxious about that fact and pointing that out to Mordecai. So they go back in verse 12. It says they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" So we again see Mordecai's faith coming out, and Mordecai understood that they were the Lord's people, and the Lord had promised that he would be with his people. And so he knew that God would provide deliverance here one way or another. And if it wasn't going to be through Esther, that it would be through someone else. And he pointed that out to Esther. But of course, in her position, she had this opportunity to do something to help. And it's very interesting how at the end of verse 14 that he points out to her, "Who knows whether you are come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Mordecai is pointing out to her, this may be the very reason that you are queen, that you've come into the kingdom to be the queen at this time, is because of this very moment. It kind of brings to mind the situation that we could read about, hold your place there in Esther, but we might be reminded of John chapter 9 about the blind man. And The disciples see this blind man one day as they're going by. And verse 1, it says, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So here these disciples are assuming that because this man was blind, this thing had happened to him, that there was some reason for that, that they must have done, either that the man himself or his parents must have done something that was wrong to have that happen to them. And notice the point that Jesus makes in verse 3. It says, Jesus answered, neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. Now consider the fact that how long had this man been blind? He had been blind from his birth. And what does Jesus answer concerning their question about why he was blind? It says, he said, it's so that the works of God could be made manifest in him. So, you know, there were many years that no doubt his parents and at this particular instant, these disciples were wondering, why is this man blind? What was the answer to that? Well, the Lord had determined from the time that that man had been born that there was going to come a time that that man would be used, as it says here, to make the works of God known. So just as we see here with Esther and Mordecai's answer to Esther, where he said, who knows whether you are come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Mordecai didn't know that for sure, but certainly that was a possibility. And of course, when we consider that the Lord is working all of these things, and certainly as Mordecai was sitting there thinking about, well, how could Esther have become queen? He certainly would have known that it wasn't by accident that the Lord did that for some reason. And so he raises that point with Esther here, that this may be the very reason that he's made you queen, is so that you can bring about this deliverance for these Jews. And so we all need to be considering different positions that we're in, the different situations that we wind up in at times. And we need to be always thinking about, well, the Lord is working all of these things, and there may be a reason here that I'm in this particular situation. And so we should be, as we mentioned at the beginning of the lesson, we need to be acknowledging the Lord in all of our ways. And so as we're going through day by day, even if we're in very difficult situations, we need to remind ourselves, well, what kind of a situation was Mordecai in? What kind of a situation was Esther in here? Things were not going well for them at this time. And yet we see here that the Lord was using them to accomplish his purpose. And so we need to be realizing that even when things may seem very difficult or very bleak, that we might not see a good path out of the situations that we're in at the moment, we need to be mindful that the Lord is working here. We're not here by ourselves. The Lord is working these things, and he has a plan that he's working through. And so if we go back to chapter 4 now, in verse 15, it says, then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. So she realizes then that Mordecai is right, and she has this enough faith here to say, if I perish, I perish, perish, perish. So she is willing to lose her life here if that is what is going to happen. She's willing that that would happen in order to make this attempt to go before the king to deliver her people. And so we need to learn from that faith that Esther has here, and that and to realize that if it's the Lord's will that we perish, then we will perish. But regardless, we need to be diligent to do the Lord's will and to be used for good by the Lord. there's many passages that we go to can go to concerning the fact that we are vessels in the Lord's hands. 2 Timothy chapter 2 reminds us about being vessels, and he says there in verse 21 that we can be a vessel unto honor. That's one that is valuable to the Lord. He says there, one that's unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use and prepared unto every good work. So we see here that both Esther and Mordecai were vessels that were prepared to be used for every good work. Acts chapter 9 is another example where we see the Lord referring to someone as a vessel. In this case, the Lord is speaking to Ananias, whom he has told to go to speak to Saul, to convert Saul, to become a Christian. Of course, at that time, Saul had been having Christians killed. And so here was Ananias in a similar situation as Esther and Mordecai, who's being asked to do something by the Lord that he's concerned for his life. That here Saul has been throwing Christians into prison, having them killed, and now he's being asked to go and to speak to this man who's been doing these things. And so the Lord directly speaks to Ananias, and in verse 15, he says about concerning Saul, he says, "Go thy way, for he, that is Saul, is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake." So the Lord had a plan here for Saul. Now, if we had been Ananias in this situation, is that what we would have thought concerning Saul? We would have seen Saul as an enemy of the church, somebody who was wreaking havoc on the church and causing a lot of damage to the church. But what was the Lord's plan? Well, the Lord said here, he is a chosen vessel unto me, and the Lord had a plan how he was going to use Saul. And of course, as part of that plan, he also has a plan for how he's going to use Ananias as in Saul's conversion. And so just as we saw with Esther and Mordecai, here Ananias is concerned for his life, and he's concerned what the ramifications could be if he goes to present himself before Saul as a Christian. Think about how difficult that would have been. But yet the Lord says he's a chosen vessel. So the Lord, again, we see in these situations has a plan that he's working, but to those of us that are outsiders in these situations, does it look like he has this particular plan in mind? It really almost looks like the opposite, doesn't it? Here it looks like the Lord is letting this man destroy the church, and all of a sudden, Ananias finds out, no, the opposite is true. Christ is getting ready to use Saul to be one of his greatest workers in the church. So we need to be asking ourselves, what has the Lord put into our hands, and what are we going to do with the situations that are put into our hands? If we go back to Esther now, we'll see some additional events that transpire in chapter 5. In verses 2 through 8, Esther goes before the king, and she finds favor before the king. And so she invites the king, and she invites Haman to this banquet that she has prepared for the next day. And meanwhile, in chapter 5, in verse 11, we see that Haman, he's been promoted by the king, and he's very joyful at this time. In verse 11, he goes and to his family, and he tells them, it says there, of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. So at this point in time, at this instant, Haman is continuing to be held in high esteem by the king, and he's very joyful, of course, because he's been seeking this glory from the king, and he's very joyful in that and telling his family of this. But at the same time, he's still very angry about what Mordecai has done. And so his family there then, his wife in particular in verse 14, and his friends, say, well, you need to let a gallows be made so that Mordecai can be hung on those gallows. So there at the end of verse 14, it says the thing pleased Haman and he caused the gallows to be made. So at this instant, things are getting worse and worse for Mordecai. We now have a man who is very powerful in the king's government who has decided that it's time to build a gallows and it's time to have Mordecai hung on those gallows. And so things appear to be getting worse and worse for Mordecai. But of course, the Lord is at work. And so in chapter 6, again, as we read some of these verses in chapter 6, we need to be asking ourselves the question, is there really such thing as a coincidence? In verse 1, it says, on that night, the king could not the king sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. So for whatever reason, of course, we know the reason. It says here the king could not sleep that night. In verse 2, as he's reading through those chronicles, he comes across the account of where Mordecai had notified them of the plan by the king's chamberlains to assassinate the king. And so the king sees that, and in verse 3, it says the king said, what honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there's nothing done for him. So notice here how the Lord is at work. Number one, the king couldn't sleep. Well, what do we sometimes do when we can't sleep? Well, maybe we go and we get a book. Well, certainly the king probably had a lot of things he could read. What did the king happen to come upon as he was reading? Well, he was reading these chronicles, and he just came across the chronicle that talked about what Mordecai had done for him. It's very interesting here, isn't it, to see how the Lord is working these things. Well, it gets even better as we continue in verse 4. We see that Haman now is in the king's court. It says, and the king said, who is in the court? Now, Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So here's Haman just a few yards away from the king, thinking, I'm going to be able to get the king to convince us to let Mordecai be hung, be killed. And meanwhile, the king is thinking, what can I do to honor Mordecai for this thing that he's done? Pretty interesting unfolding of events here, isn't it? And verse 5, the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman stands in the court. And the king said, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor? Now, we can almost see the Cheshire grin on Haman's face as the king is asking in this question, because who does Haman think the king is referring to here? Of course, Haman thinks he's referring to himself. And the king is asking, what would you like? What can we do for the man that the king delights to honor in? So it's like being asked, what do you want for Christmas? You know, and it's anything is yours. And so, of course, Haman's biggest concern was to be done away with Mordecai, because it was really the last thing that was sort of a problem with him having complete honor amongst all of the people. And so it points out there that he's thinking in his heart, to whom would the king delight to honor more than myself? So, of course, we again see that Haman thinks quite highly of himself. And he now thinks the king is thinking that way as well. But of course, we ask ourselves again, is this just coincidence that these things are happening and unfolding in this way? And of course, we understand that it's not. As we've seen, the Lord is working all of these things. And so Haman answers the king and talks about letting this one be put on with royal apparel and to be ride upon the king's horse before the people. And so that's the answer that he gives to the king in verses 7 through 9. And he's just imagining himself with this great honor that's getting, he thinks is getting ready to happen to him. But suddenly things take a very, very different turn for Haman. And again, we see how the hand of the Lord is working. In verse 10, it says, "Then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse as thou hast said." So you can again just see the smile getting larger and larger with Haman. But then the king finishes his sentence and he says, "And do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sits at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken." So we see a complete turn of events happening in just a sentence from the king. The king has in mind to do all these glorious things that Haman has determined. Those things are to be done to Mordecai. And of course, in verse 12, we see Mordecai going home in shame. Haman going home in shame. Verse 12, it says, "Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered." So the Lord here has abased Haman. It reminds us of what he says there in Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar, when he finally learned, he said, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to obey." So here we see that the Lord, as part of this work that he is accomplishing, has abased Haman, the one that has been seeking to destroy the Lord's people. In chapter 7, we see that the heart of the king is moved here. We see that the banquet is held as Esther had requested. And Esther then talks about the fact that her people are set to be destroyed, to be perished, and there in verse 4. And so in verse 5, the king asks, "Well, who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so?" And of course, the man is right next to the king there. And so in verse 6, Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." So now Haman has been exposed to the king. So within a matter of 24 hours, things have gone from where Haman was the top person in the king's eyes to now where he is one that the king is ready to destroy. And we see in verse 9, how the Lord turns the things around on Haman that he had determined to do. In verse 9, it says, "Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, that it stands in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified." Again, we see here, and we remember what we read earlier in Proverbs 21 and verse 1, where it says the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and as the rivers of water, and he turns it whithersoever he will. It didn't take very long for the Lord to turn the king's heart here from one extreme to the other concerning Haman. And we need to recognize that it just takes an instant in any of these situations that we see happening around us today for the Lord to be making these kinds of changes to carry out the work that he has in mind. And so while things may be looking rather dim for periods, and we may not understand why certain things are happening, certainly we wouldn't have understood many of these events if we were just there seeing them unfold before us, if we were here in this time with during Esther. But we realize here that this is the Lord's work. He's carrying out a plan that he had in place. And so we need to be reminded that we belong to the Lord. Romans 14, just a couple more passages here. Romans 14, verses 7 and 8. He says here, "For none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. For whether we live unto the Lord, and whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's." That needs to be our mind at all times. And Of course, we have to be prepared for whatever case it may be. And that takes faith in order to do that. But we need to have that mind that we are the Lord's and that we were created by Him for a purpose. We belong to Him and He has a plan for us. And we need to be looking at all these situations that He's putting us in and being ready to consider, is this the time that He wants me to do a certain action that's needed? So we all need to be ready for that time. We need to have that courage whenever that time may come to stand up for what is right in the Lord's eyes, despite the fact that everyone else may be doing the opposite. And we need to be ready when it is our time to be used for the Lord's work. So I hope we'll all be encouraged to be considering all of these things around us, whether it's a big thing or a small thing, and that we will be ready to do what the Lord would have us to do in any of those situations. We'll now have our closing song.